Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Swinging in the backyard, pull up in your fast car, whistling my name. Open up a beer and you say get over here and play a video game.
The Curious Case of Lana Del Rey. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Today we debate a divisive star of the blogosphere. And later, a live performance from the New York electropop outfit called Tiny Victories. And a trio of great new releases in our weekly Pick 3. But let's start with the kind of controversy that only the internet can fuel. Lana Del Rey caught the attention of some indie music blogs last summer with this song called Video Games. The song was catchy, but that wasn't all. Lana herself seemed like the total package, a singer with a smoky voice, a songwriter whose lyrics were romantic but somehow spooky, and a fashion plate with femme fatale good looks. Then came the pushback. Lana Del Rey was actually Lizzie Grant, a musician from Lake Placid, New York, who'd been struggling to launch a career for about 5 years. Cue the howls about inauthenticity. A widely panned performance on Saturday Night Live in January only fanned the flames. So today, we'll ask you, is Lana Del Rey fascinating or fluff? It's this week's
Soundcheck Smackdown.
And two gladiators square off in the ring on Lana Del Rey. Joining us on the phone, Jessica Hopper, the Chicago-based music critic. She writes for the Chicago Tribune, Spin, and others. And Washington Post music critic Chris Richards joins us on the line from our nation's capital. Jessica, Chris, welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having me.
Jessica, let me start with you. You find Lana Del Rey interesting. In fact, you in one of your articles, refer to her as Amy Winehouse with the safety on. What do you mean by that?
I feel like she's straddling somewhere between, you know, the good girl and the bad girl, and that's part of her appeal, that she plays with some of the traditional archetypes of, you know, what we expect from, you know, female singer or women in rock, but she's sort of like, it's hard to tell whether she's sort of the reformed bad girl or the, maybe she used to be the bad girl and now she's the good girl, or if she's the good girl with the fascination with the dark side or these bad boys.
So you like that ambiguity in her persona?
Well, I think just as the persona that she has, I think, is fundamentally interesting, and I think that's part of the reason that she is really appealing to a lot of young girls and, you know, even discerning music fans, believe it or not, are buying her record. And I think that she's interesting. What she's doing and the sort of nostalgia that she plays on really does connect with people.
Chris Richards, you are a discerning music fan, but not a fan of Lana Del Rey, right?
I'm not. And I want to believe all those things that Jessica's saying, but, you know, I want to believe that these songs are about desire and conflicting passions and the essence of being a young woman in 2012. But just on a gut level, I don't feel anything from this music. And I think that's maybe what a lot of people are feeling as well, because we have this situation where this music is being defined by the discussion around it. And that, to me, is a sign of uncompelling, weak music. You know, great music wouldn't allow itself to be buried in all the keystrokes that she's gotten. So I know there's been a huge debate, which we're going to get into, about, you know, her background and what that led up to. But for me, it's when the album came out that I realized that this was not fantastic stuff that we should be wasting our life energy on, you know?
Well, thank you for wasting a little of your life energy with us today, Chris, to do just that. But now, the album has come out, and Jessica, it sits at number 2 on the Billboard Top 200. So there is a lot, you know, there is a lot of support for Lana Del Rey. What have been, I mean, as you've sort of culled through the many keystrokes that have been, according to Chris, wasted on Lana Del Rey on this argument, you know, what do you see as the kind of the main thing that you would say to the people who are basically calling Lana Del Rey a fraud and not worthy of our attention and our time?
Well, it's just funny that the things that she's being judged on are typically things that we would not. It's almost sort of you don't hear people talk about male artists in the same way. A lot of the inauthenticity debate around her has to do with her looks, with, you know, her quote-unquote, her dad's rich, or, you know, he funded this, or people saying that she's basically this Frankenstein creation by, you know, some dudes in the Universal boardroom, you know, that she's not a real thing.
Right. Now,
and,
who,
and I mean, is, a lot of the detraction of that, and I did, you know, a fairly lengthy story about her for Spin that didn't actually involve talking to her. I talked to basically everybody but her, and she's very much been doing exactly what we're seeing back when she was Lizzie Grant, or, you know, since 2008 and earlier, and that her image has just evolved. And
Jessica, let me ask you something. I mean, you, in your research for this, I've heard people, you know, I've what you just said, that thing about, oh, it's dad's money and stuff. Who is her dad? I mean, what is there money in the family? Is there anything to that?
I, you know, it's her dad has some success, it appears, from being kind of like an entrepreneur. But everyone that I talked to said, you know, she's very much, if there's a Svengali, she's it. There's no one behind her.
Okay.
And I think there's a lot of expectation now that pop stars come to us fully formed. And I remember there was some fallout maybe 2-3 years ago when Lady Gaga headlined Lollapalooza, and people, quote-unquote, discovered these photos how she had opened Lollapalooza maybe 2 or 3 years before, and she's looking like this kind of, you know, low-rent Madonna circa 88, you know, just wearing, like, basically underwear and a bra and, like, doing, like, a headstand or something. You know, just, and people are like, oh, look, she's so fake, or, you know, just sort of, we just so expect to get, like, this full package, and that as Lana Del Rey, she's had the audacity to have the desire to want to be successful and understand what that takes, and then sort of form that, you know, and people, like, really look down upon that for some reason.
What that takes, that kind of success, Chris, is ultimately good music. So, I mean, let's talk about the music for a moment. Her song, National Anthem, appears on the album Born to Die. Is this a particular favorite of yours?
It's my least favorite. My least favorite on the album, for sure. The lyrics to me are just kind of, they irk me. And I understand she's trying to connect with hip-hop, but it feels very clumsy and unnatural. There's that line, money is the reason we exist. Everybody knows it. It's a fact. Kiss, kiss. This line makes my skin crawl for some reason. And I just can't connect as hard as I've tried with this music. It's not there for me. But if I wonder if we can just go back 1 second to a point that you guys were making earlier about, you know,
why don't we do this? I'll give you a chance to come back to that point in a moment. But let's hear the song that Chris was just talking about. This is Lana Del Rey's National Anthem.
Everybody knows it, it's a fact. Kiss, kiss. I sing the national anthem while I'm standing over your body, hold you like a pie.
The song's called National Anthem by Lana Del Rey from her album called Born to Die, which went right to number 2 on the Billboard 200 when it came out a couple of weeks ago. There was, of course, the much-discussed live performance on TV's Saturday Night Live in January. And we are smacking Lana Del Rey around on our Soundcheck Smackdown today. Jessica Hopper, supportive of Lana Del Rey as a singer and songwriter and a young woman finding her way in what is still very much a man's world. She's on the line with us, Chris Richards, the Washington Post pop music critic. I could feel your skin crawling from here in New York, Chris.
I just threw up a little bit in our studio here. Sorry.
I have to agree with Chris that I think that is one of the weakest songs on the record. You know, very much when she was working on her sort of Lizzie Grant material.
Again, Lizzie Grant is Lana Del Rey's birth name.
Yes, and, you know, like many performers, you know, she has chosen a stage name that suits what she's doing. much to people's ire, inexplicable ire.
Yeah, like it's okay for Madonna and Lady Gaga and Rihanna, but it's not okay for Lana Del Rey for some reason.
Or Bob Dylan.
Or Bob Dylan, yeah. But Chris wanted to come back to something you had mentioned before, Jessica. Chris?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, we're talking about the idea of being bankrolled by your parents, which is very common in the world of music. She should not be, you know, given a hard time for that. The thing that Lana Del Rey reminds me the most of, actually, is a band called The Strokes. When they first came along, you know, everyone was wondering who was behind this image. Were they trying to relive this kind of like CBGB fantasy thing, mm-hmm. where their dad's all bazillionaires? And I was skeptical of them back then. I mean, I was a much younger, different person at the time. But, you know, it took me a long time for The Strokes to win me over with the quality of their music. So that's the thing that I guess, you know, we kind of have to wait and see and hope that in the internet era, we have the patience to wait and see if these songs do mean something later on or if they do manage to kind of seep into our collective bloodstream in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a time will tell sort of thing. But we just don't have the patience right now. And that's kind of the unfortunate reality that we're living in these days, I think.
All right, Soundcheck listeners, what do you think? We're talking about Lana Del Rey, phenom or fraud, fascinating or fluff? Give us a call. You can join us on our webpage, WNYC.org/soundcheck. You can call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Again, the webpage to leave your comments, WNYC.org/soundcheck. And Jessica, I want to come back to something you said too, although something different. You said, we expect our artists to come to us fully formed. That seems actually like a very kind of traditional way we would have expected to, you know, have an artist appear in our lives. In the internet age, that doesn't happen anymore. Is that what we're seeing here? Are we watching a young artist kind of figure it out as she goes along?
I think absolutely. I'm not expecting her to maintain this exact version of Lana Del Rey that we see now. I mean, that certainly hasn't been the case so far, but also, you know, she was a young artist and someone who was just figuring out who she was as a songwriter and how to pursue that professionally.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, too, is that she wasn't trying to fit in with the sort of, while she has been very much embraced by the indie blogosphere and all that, she wasn't trying to fit in with that. She wasn't trying to, you know, get on a tour with Grizzly Bear or, you know, hang out with Animal Collective or something. She was playing, you know, daytime showcases for A&R people at, you know, clubs and things like that. She was really always pursuing the idea of more of a major label stardom and something that's much bigger. And so I don't think she really had an eye on all this very much.
Mm-hmm.
Cool sort of thing. She wasn't going to Kickstarter her album.
Right. Chris, you know, as we've seen, the blogosphere is quick to embrace and then equally quick to push away and heap abuse upon. Is that what's happening here?
I think that's absolutely what's happening, and it's unfortunate, but I think maybe at the end of the day, the silver lining on that kind of cloud is that it creates a more competitive popscape where we should be demanding more of our artists, not less, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I think she was rushed into the whole Saturday Night Live thing too quickly. And maybe there is something there. I don't want to say that, you know, this music is never going to be valuable at all, you know, and she as an artist isn't going to grow. But I feel, you know, the more conversation we kind of heap onto this, the harder it is going to be for her to kind of like reassert herself to an audience here in the U.S., you know. But time will tell. Time will tell. Are we patient enough to wait? I don't know.
Well, let's revisit a little bit of Lana Del Rey's much talked about performance on Saturday Night Live back in January, singing the song Blue Jeans.
Big dreams, gangsters, said you had to leave to start your life over. I was like, no, please, stay here. We don't need no money, we can make it all work. Headed out on Sunday, said you'd come on Monday. I stayed up waiting, anticipating, and pacing, but he was chasing paper. Caught up in the game, it was the last I heard. But I will love you till the end of dawn. I would wait a million years. Promise you'll remember that you're mine. Baby, can you see through the tears? Love you more than those pictures before. Say you'll remember. Now, baby, woo, I love you.
That is Lana Del Rey live on Saturday Night Live back in January singing her song Blue Jeans, and there were howls of protest on the blogosphere saying this was one of the worst performances. It may not have been a great performance, but we have certainly seen worse, as some of our Soundcheck listeners have suggested both on the phone and on our website. So let's go to Joel Meyer with some of our listener comments. Joel.
John, our listener Brett from Williamsburg just wrote one sentence. This is the type of act that Saturday Night Live books in 2012, really? Well, it's actually two sentences. Sorry, John. And Bill from New York writes, although her performance on SNL was awkward and disappointing, it looked to me like some stage fright combined with not being a live performance-oriented musician, her music is dark, interesting, and brilliantly written.
She did look, there did seem to be some stage fright involved. But, you know, she is, as we've mentioned, a young artist still feeling her way. Tim is joining us on the line from Mount Vernon. Tim, what do you think of Lana Del Rey?
I think Lana Del Rey illustrates a lot of the dream of the DIY economy. She cultivated her own image. She wrote her own song. She made her own video, and this launched her career. But what she couldn't do on her own is she couldn't protect herself from the PR backlash.
Mm-hmm. So do you think it was a case of too much Lana too soon? Should she have waited till she had some kind of corporate machinery behind her to do exactly what you're saying, that to protect her from the backlash?
I think that no matter how much technology helps us create our own images or art or what have you, there are still human strings that need to be pulled. There's still a lot of the media machine that needs to be taken care of for us.
Mm-hmm. Jessica, what did you think? Again, Jessica Hopper with us from Chicago. She's written about Lana Del Rey for Spin magazine. What did you think of the SNL, the Saturday Night Live performance?
Oh, it was rough. I mean, there's no getting around it. But very frequently, I think artists who are a little bit more nuanced or perhaps require certain things live to reproduce their record don't do very well on Saturday Night Live. You know, the kind of people that sound great on Saturday Night Live are like Lady Antebellum, where it's just people singing really loudly with digital amps, you know. But I think, you know, if you look at, Lana Del Rey did Letterman maybe, 3 days later?
Mm-hmm.
And she was amazing. She was great. She totally killed it. And so I think, you know.
Funny, that we haven't heard so much about that performance.
Oh,
so.
No, you really don't.
I would say that's because it was just a mediocre performance, though, on Letterman. I thought it was just fine. Right?
Well, was it
that great?
In comparison to SNL, I think it was, you know, radically
right.
better.
Yeah, and that's what I would say. In comparison, it was, because we had such a bad experience on Saturday night. Two nights later, it's like, okay, I guess this is a little better. But I think if that was our first performance as well, it would have been problematic.
So what about?
I think people are willing to find a problem with whatever she's doing. Though, you know, I understand that Chris is just not into her. In general,
into you, Lana. That's right.
But so many, you know, and I really respect Chris as a writer and a critic, and
big
you know,
butt coming here.
No. Chris is one of the few people who've written pieces about her where it really is about the music.
Yes.
And also a little bit about how you know, people are deconstructing.
All right. Now, Jessica, you've written about her and her music, too. So I want to ask you about, let's go back to the days when she wasn't Lana Del Rey, when she was still Lizzie Grant, living in a, you know, this like trailer park in New Jersey or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
This demo of Axl Rose's Husband, what does this show us about Lana Del Rey?
I think it shows that she has been very much the same sort of artist, doing the same sort of songs, working with the same sort of nostalgia and lyrical themes. I mean, there's things in this song. I was surprised when I found this on YouTube, and it was it's from a demo she did in 2008. And you think, oh, if this was, you know, well produced, it could have been on her album. It's a lot of the same ideas and themes. And to me, that is part of the things that prove that she is not just this, you know,
manufactured. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's hear a little bit. This is from 2008, when Lana Del Rey was still using her birth name, Lizzie Grant. The song's called Axl Rose's Husband. This is just a demo.
You're my Axl Rose husband, blue hat train top, white pony at Kevin, male red, white, and blue girl,
Star Spangled Danger. You my heavenly halo. I said, Daddy, I need you. Greenwich, I need you. Strangled up in ivy. I'm the Garden of Eden. Lady Liberty.
A 4-year-old demo from the artist now known as Lana Del Rey. Then she was still Lizzie Grant. Axl Rose Husband is the name of it. And Jessica, twice today you have used the word nostalgia when talking about Lana Del Rey. Nostalgia for what? What do you hear in this music?
I think it's very much a throwback to this, idea of a pure and simple sort of golden America. And, you know, she plays with that a lot in her sort of, stage setup, you know, with the pictures of Elvis and Priscilla and the American flags and, you know, culling her videos from vintage footage. And I think it, in that way, she's very smart in tapping into culture is just generally nostalgia hungry right now.
Chris, there's the big sound to a lot of her music, the lush orchestrations and stuff. Is that a kind of a throwback sound to you? I mean, for you, is it Much Ado About Nothing? What do you think of that?
Well, I kind of hear her hiding in that. Maybe I don't sense the personality that everyone's getting from this music. And I think the more reverb you put on something, you know, you kind of put yourself deep in a cave. And overall, this music to me, it just kind of seems like it's provided us with a big slab of emptiness to kind of project a lot of our anxieties about what pop stardom means in this new digital age, and whether that's fair or not, time's gonna prove. But for now, the music just isn't moving me.
And yet, there it sits, near the top of the pop charts. It's Lana Del Rey. The album's called Born to Die. And leading the way is this song called Video Games. We've been speaking with Jessica Hopper, music critic who writes for the Chicago Tribune and Spin, etc. And Chris Richards, the Washington Post pop music critic. Jessica, Chris, thank you both for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you.
Play a video game. It's you, it's you, it's you.
Up next, 3 must-hear new releases in our weekly Pick 3. And then later, a live performance from the Brooklyn electropop band Tiny Victories. They're coming up later on Soundcheck.